What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're anyone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Quick shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum, as well as they have some mints. They have natural caffeine balanced with L-theanine and infused with B vitamins. Helps with memory, focus, it's a little pick-me-up. I chew it really throughout the days whenever I'm working or whenever I'm going to the gym and I need just a little extra little pick me up and I don't want to reach for another energy drink or coffee, especially later in the afternoon. It's definitely been a great little tool that I've implemented over like the last 6 months. And I really, really enjoy it. So shout out to those guys over there. So get out there and try some NeuroGum.
And on behalf of Captain Beard Co., we would just like to say thank you to the Zach and Pat Show for giving us a spot to, you know, just kind of get the word out about what we do. We are a handmade men's grooming company right here in St. Louis, Missouri. And our goal is really, really simple. We want to create low ingredient, understandable products that are not going to be full of a bunch of proprietary garbage that, I mean, if you can't pronounce it, why are you going to let it get absorbed by your hair and skin? That's just not smart. But you know, if you're someone who deals with itchiness, dry skin, patchiness of the beard, or you just want to support local, guess what? We got beard balms, we got beard butters, we have face washes, and also really great scented candles. It's funny because I was helping our friends over at Fit Flavor record and they had one of our candles there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I was like, holy shit, I didn't even know we made that scent.
We need one of those in here.
Yes, yeah, we do.
We do. That'd be nice to light during the podcast for a little
ambiance.
Set
you know? The mood.
A fake picture of one's going to show up there on the video. You'll see. But regardless of anything else, if you are looking for some good men's grooming products, come check us out at Captain Beard Co.
All right, guys. Now to introduce our awesome guest today. He is a bodybuilder, a nutrition contest prep coach, the owner and operator of Ascend Chiropractic and Ascend Nutrition, the great and powerful Dr. Justin Kelly.
Welcome, thank you, guys. Sir. Thank you. Happy to be here. I really appreciate the invite to the podcast, so I'm pretty excited to be here.
Yeah, dude. We're excited to have you. So I guess let's just first start off with, you know, let's introduce everybody. Let's tell everybody about yourself a little bit.
Story. We were kind of touching on a little bit before we started recording. I'm from Northern Michigan, pretty far up there. For those of you that don't know, I'm from the northern part of the Southern Peninsula. There's two peninsulas. So pretty far up there, almost Canadian, but not quite. Of course I played hockey growing up, which is why I listened to that podcast with Louis, actually, because I had heard the name before. So I was interested in that, but, played hockey pretty much my whole life growing up. Tore my ACL my last game of my senior year.
Oh, shit.
And so that kind of ended the career, which fortunately turned out to be a really good thing because I went to Michigan State University and I wanted to like try to walk on once my leg was healed. I had to have a full ACL repair, surgery. They put a cadaver ligament in there. And then I was like, all right, let's see if I can, you know, continue the dream. By the time tryouts were starting, I was in a pre-med program at Michigan State and there was no way I could, or no way. You know, the first semester punched me in the face. I was like 4.0 student high school, didn't have to study, just skated by, played hockey, you know, did well. And then college was like, no, you're not that smart. Like, you got to start trying. So retrospect, that injury was a blessing because that, you know, forced me to focus on school, which led to me eventually becoming a doctor in chiropractic. And here I am. I own a chiropractic practice here in St. Louis area in Webster Groves. Started that right out of college. As soon as I graduated, there was like a 2 or 3 month period where I had to wait for my license to come into the mail. After you graduate, you have to send a bunch of information.
Is this graduating from chiropractic school?
Logan University chiropractic school. So I graduated Michigan State, moved to St. Louis for chiropractic school, and that's how I ended up here.
Got it.
Yeah, it's interesting how St. Louis is like the mecca for chiropractic
medicine.
Logan University is like,
it's big. Huge. So there's like 15, 20 chiropractic schools in the U.S. probably. Yeah. Don't quote the number, but there's not a lot. And so this is a very centrally located one. There's also one in Chicago, and then you got some out west and some in like New York and Florida, Georgia. So I came and visited, and I thought it was beautiful. I ended up moving here. And so we have a big concentration of chiropractors here because it's one of the few schools in the nation.
Well, that makes sense because I feel like there are a lot of chiropractors.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everyone you talk to will say they've gone to Logan.
Yeah.
For sure.
So, I guess that's kind of like me in a nutshell and kind of how I got here. Like I said, after I graduated Logan, the 2 or 3 month waiting period for my license came in the mail. And then I started to practice. I was very fortunate to have kind of an opportunity present itself for me, where I was able to work with a friend and partner in the gym world. So I guess the gym kind of collided with chiropractic. So I've had offices and gyms basically since I started. And then just kind of ran with it after that. And I was able to, you know, living here for 4-ish years prior to starting allowed me to build up like a good support group, First Form, S2, stuff like that, and be able to like start a practice basically from scratch and luckily be able to pay the bills.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So do you still skate at all or play at all?
Not really. No?
Do you think you want to get back into it?
I would love to. I miss it a lot. But I did go skating like this winter, but it was like an open skate, no stick or puck or anything. So
just get putting the skates on.
Yeah, exactly. It was just nice to go. I took my girlfriend with me and it was her first time skating. She had like rollerbladed but never ice skated. So we went skating. Honestly, it was somewhere downtown. I don't remember. It was fun, but yeah, I don't get to play a lot of stick and puck anymore.
Was it the outdoor rink in Fort Park, Steinberg?
Yeah, I think, yep, that's the one. Yep. So it was a lot of fun.
Used to work there. I grew up. Yeah, when I was still playing pro ball, that was one of my off season jobs.
Just like skating around, making sure people don't go too fast.
Handing out skates, and then I was that guy on the ice. I can't tell you. The worst part, like you feel bad because they tell you like, hey, as soon as the Zamboni opens, you got to get off the ice. Like as soon as it's getting ready to come out, I can't tell you how many proposals I fucked up. People proposing to people.
Really?
Because they're like waiting for everybody to get off the ice.
It is
kind of
like a romantic outdoor forest park.
At least one a month.
It's a pretty high percentage, I feel.
Yeah.
Like.
I never
would have thought about that.
There was a lot. I'm like, just come and tell somebody before you're going
to
give us a warning
or something. Let them know. Like,
I don't want to be an ass.
Especially if you're like, you know, I don't know. Maybe they didn't know or maybe they didn't skate often. But if you're like me, I know how ice rinks work.
Right.
I would have been like, talk to somebody, the ice manager, Zamboni driver, be like, hey, dude, give me like a minute or something.
Well, you
something.
Think you're like,
we should put up a sign. Like, if somebody. You're planning to propose, talk to a rink attendant.
Yeah.
Well, you think the guy would like, hey, I want to get this, the music and the light, you know, like, you like, let's
I'm
set,
picturing
let's...
Happy Gilmore where he's like, exactly. Endless, endless love in the dark.
Yeah.
Endless love. Endless love.
Yeah.
But because it would take so long because the guy, like, obviously the guy's nervous. He's getting ready to pop a question. So they would like be awkwardly standing on the ice for a few, like for a minute by the time,
like in the middle,
like not in the middle, but like off to the side where people could take pictures and all that. And so like, they're just awkwardly standing there and every single time, just awkwardly standing there and I'm ushering people off and they're off to the side and I'm like, guys, come on, you gotta get off the ice. Gotta get off the ice. One guy was turning, like even just was like, dude, I'm trying to fucking propose. And the girl was just like, oh, what? And he's like, well, thanks for ruining it, buddy. I'm like, dude, I'm just
a little on
doing my
doing
job,
my job here, man. Sorry.
Yeah, get off the ice.
Yeah. But I still play. I grew up playing hockey, loved hockey. Okay. That was my favorite sport. Once I retired from baseball and could start skating again, I got back into it.
Yeah.
And I play like Brentwood, they used to have a bunch of leagues out there. But they've shut that down. Well, we're unsure yet because they partnered up with another league that I play in called HNA. And that's a little bit more structured, a little bit more like they keep stats. And if you win your league or your division, you actually get invited to Toronto for a national tournament.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun and the competition's pretty good. So if you are looking to get back, let me know and I can get you in touch with some guys.
Yeah, I might have to take a look at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good time. It's a lot of fun.
Good cardio. You know, yeah. Because you must work out, right?
A little bit of Zumba.
A little bit of Zumba.
I do the P90X yoga sometimes. Yeah.
I do some push-ups. Yeah. I do like 100 push-ups before bed.
Just 100 push-ups
before
bed?
That's all you
got to
do to look
like
that.
That's it. That's all it takes.
Planet Fitness loves you.
Yeah. I just go there for the food.
Yeah. Just go there for the free Domino's and Ben and Jerry's that they handle.
Do they still do that?
I don't know. I've never been.
I mean, it's almost worth it with the, it's like a, what, $10
membership?
Like a $10
membership and you get like,
but it's like
$10 a month,
break.
You go there and get free pizza like once a week.
Yeah. Like certain places, itself. It's impossible to break your contract there.
Yeah.
I'm sure it is. I don't know.
I feel like club's pretty bad about that. They really don't like breaking contracts.
Yeah. They're bad too. I think I've broken a club and joined back several times and every single time it's like kind of a fucking nightmare.
Yeah. I remember like when COVID happened, I was like, I'm going to pause, like cancel it. I'm going to wait until everything is done. You know, I'm not going to continue paying for a membership.
And
before
then
lockdown.
You and everybody else. And they're like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I remember like getting a bill and it was like, you owe $12 still. And I'm like, I canceled my membership. Like, I don't know what this is. And then like 2 years later, they're like, come back. We'll waive your enrollment. I'm like, oh,
I'm
a little
good.
Desperate, you guys. Hey?
Yeah. You guys really want me. You feel a little. So you obviously, you work out, you're a competitive bodybuilder. So, let's, how'd you get into that?
Because I tore my ACL. Okay. I'd already worked out and did a lot of dry land. You played hockey. So, you do a lot of dry land and a lot of running and conditioning and stuff. And then in the summer, obviously we'd go hit chest and biceps and, not legs very much, probably. I don't remember.
You gotta get the muscles to show off the girls.
Yeah, exactly. So we would still, work out and stuff in high school. But after I tore my ACL, I couldn't skate or train lower body for like several months. I had a very good recovery, but I would just go to the gym and work out. And, now I was in college, not playing competitive sport. I started playing hockey when I was 2.5, 3. So I'd play that, my whole life. And so I no longer had like a competitive outlet. I was like, all right, I'm just going to work out and try and get jacked. And, college was just, class, eat, work out, drink.
Yeah.
So I just, and that was back when they had the Jack 3D that was like illegal. Yeah.
The good.
A little bit of meth in it, I think.
That was the first pre-workout I ever took.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Ziz.
I think I was 16 or 17. I remember a buddy I played football with, gave me a scoop and I was like, what is this?
Just tweet. Yeah.
You turned me in the gym for 3 hours.
No, I did. It was great.
I wish we could take that. They mandated what we could take. We had to get it from our trainer if we were going to take anything.
Because your list of rules is so strict. Yeah.
I thought this was America.
What was in the Jack that made it illegal?
DMEA or DMAE, something like that.
Who knows?
Dimethylene, they were coming out with a new list of illegal substances every month that we could and couldn't take.
And then the supplement companies would change it by one carbon or one molecule, and then technically it's legal again.
Well, it's like what they do with the Delta 8 THC.
Yeah.
It's just like, come on, man.
Now Major League Baseball requires, and which First Forms does, and I think they might have a monopoly on minor league and professional baseball, is the NSF certified for sport label. Okay. That's the only stuff you can take. It has to have that label. If it doesn't, you're putting yourself at risk. But when I was playing, so we would get a new list, and basically what they would say is, all right, well, because we would buy stuff at the beginning of the season, and then like halfway through the season, it'd be illegal. And so, we would just keep our receipts just to show like, hey, yeah, no, I bought this back when. And so, no, I can't test positive, or you can't fail a drug test.
Because I got it before it was illegal.
Right.
Okay.
So like you continue to buy the same shit, just keep that original receipt from the first year.
Keep that receipt handy.
Yeah.
Jacked was discontinued in 2013 because of the illegal substance known as, I'm going to try to pronounce this, dimethylamine, DMAA. Though its updated formula sits on the store shelves to this day, and I've just heard it's like a disappointing vessel of what it once was.
Yeah, it's not the same anymore. Like I said, it was borderline. Something.
No, I remember feeling, because I didn't know anything to compare it to at the time, but then I remember getting different pre-workouts after it got discontinued, and it was like, oh, this stuff doesn't, it doesn't have the same pop.
Yeah.
We had this stuff, obviously we didn't have that. We had this stuff called P4. I can't remember.
I think that was by Cellucor, wasn't it?
I think there was
C4, and then P4 was like green, I think.
I forget what it was, but it was called P4, and we had to have we had to be very careful with what we scooped out. You got too much, it would fuck you up. And so, guys would take it, and especially relievers, when we have to get jacked up, moving really quick. So guys would just take it, and they would put it in, they would just have a little bit of water in there and throw it in there and just take it a shot. And you're seeing guys shaking on the mound. I could never pitch like that. So I never took that. But yeah, that was...
just nothing but a big old dip in.
There was one guy that went in and took, and I didn't realize what it did, and he took two scoops of it, and he was
like sweating and shaking.
When
I take too much pre-workout, it just makes me have the shit, so that's what I'd be worried about.
He never went into the game. He just took two because he thought he was going to be pitching.
Oh, and then he just sat
there, just tweaking.
He had to go in after the game or during the game and have the trainer check on him because they were worried that he might have heart palpitations and shit. We're like, what the fuck is in this stuff?
This is good stuff.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. So, so got into bodybuilding. And how long, because obviously how long did it take before you got into lifting weights and all that before you started doing competitions?
I graduated high school in 10. So it was 2010 when I was starting Michigan State. Like I said, I was already decently fit and had worked out, but then I got pretty serious and was in the gym 4 or 5 days a week. Saturday, Sunday were for drinking. And then, It was in 2015 when I decided to do my first competition. So
okay.
In the bodybuilding world, we have like kind of a saying, it's like breakups make bodybuilders. And it's like, you get, you know, sure. you get dumped and you're like, fuck everything.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to win this break.
Had a model girlfriend.
She's going to see me on Facebook in 2 years and she's going to be pissed. If she so broke pissed. Up with me.
Yeah. But yeah, I got dumped. So little tangent real quick. Cause it's just kind of ironic. It's not the right word, but funny. Got dumped on my birthday at Michigan State when I was a senior. Because her ex went to used to go to Michigan State and she was like worried about seeing him. My name's Justin Terrence, JT. Her ex's name is Justin Thomas, JT. So just a weird like coincidence. But anyways, yeah. So she leaves on my birthday and I'm like, fuck, all right. Well, I'm gonna do a photo shoot and I'm gonna do a competition. And like 4 months later, I did my first competition. I won. Yeah. You know, I've obviously been training before that. So sure. It wasn't just out of nowhere. But I was like, I'm gonna get a coach. I'm gonna do a show. I'm gonna do a photo shoot. And like, fuck all this. I'm leaving it behind. And so I just like hyper focused on that to avoid feeling, you know, getting dumped on my birthday.
Mm-hmm. No.
And then like, as soon as I got on stage, it was like an adrenaline rush. And I'm like, holy cow, that was like crazy. And like the weird thing is with bodybuilding, you spend months and months and months and years of working for minutes on stage. And like, this was a small show. My first show, I did one category. I was on stage for maybe a minute and then prejudging it over, come back finals. You're on the stage for a minute again, maybe. Get your medal and it's like done. All that work,
for two minutes.
Such a small amount of time. Damn, so it was like an adrenaline rush. And then I got off and I'm like, I want to do this again. That was so short. So then I got like even more serious and like
So you're like, fuck yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's fun winning. Yeah. Sure. So, just got more and more serious, started dieting more and like getting more, you know, on track with my food and training in the off season, a lot less drinking. I think at this point, 2015, I had just graduated. I guess, you know, probably 6-8 months prior I'd graduated Michigan State.
Okay. I guess you and I graduated. You graduated in 2015.
I think Michigan State was 14.
Okay, so you're
14 or 15. Because I graduated high school in 2010.
Okay, I was 11.
Okay, so yeah, I guess Michigan State should have been 14 because I graduated on time.
Me too.
and then, like I said, after that win, after doing it for the first time, just got more and more serious and got more and more dedicated. And then I hired a coach in 2016, which is when I moved here. I think I'd been here for roughly a year, 9 months, something like that. And I was like, I want to like be serious about this. So I was at Logan, I hired a coach. I worked with him 3 years, I guess 2 years. And then 2018, I did my like second round of shows and I ended up doing three. I took second in all three of them.
Oh, damn.
So like, I've always like I win and then I get a second and then I come back really fucking pissed. And then I do well and win. And then this time again, last year I took a couple seconds. So I always come back really hard after a loss like that. Cause it's, you know, it's motivating, but I did three shows in 18, got second in all of them, had a really good time, loved it. Did another 2 years, like what we call off season.
Yeah.
Came back in 21. I won the show I did. Technically I missed the overall. I didn't win that. So I was pretty pissed off still, even though I won my class, I was really mad. I remember like coming off stage and people like, congrats. And I was like, I lost. And like, got first. I'm like, yeah, but I didn't win everything. Like, I wasn't the best guy at the whole show. I was the best guy in my class. But yeah, and then it literally, like, it just got slowly more progressively, like, strict in a bigger part of my life. And now I'm at the point where I'm, like, fighting to earn a pro card.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited for that.
That's really cool. So, like, what does that mean exactly? I mean, I'm pretty ignorant. I know a little bit about bodybuilding, but I don't know a ton. So did you start out doing, I know that there's physique and classic physique and then bodybuilding.
Yes.
The three categories.
Yeah. So men, there's men's physique, classic physique, and then open bodybuilding.
So in the physique, they wear the board shorts.
Yep.
And then the
classic physique is kind of, it's supposed to.
Like that Arnold picture.
Right? Exactly. Like emulate the Arnold. So they do height. Your weight class is based on your height. So you can't be 5'7" and 280 on stage.
Okay.
They want it to be that aesthetic, like naturally pleasing. It's obviously still very high level, but it's a little bit more aesthetic. Whereas open bodybuilders, especially like pro open bodybuilders, you might have a guy that's 5'8", weigh 300 pounds.
Jeez.
Just massive, like, you know, almost wider than they are tall.
Mm-hmm.
So that classic physique is supposed to be a little bit more like pretty and aesthetic. And then the men's physique is board shorts. And it's gotten bigger now. I always kind of said it was like Abercrombie models.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, Abercrombie models, like we got a little bit
Barbie
more shredded.
And Ken.
Yeah. Like very pretty, very aesthetic, but like not that big. They're, you know, in the pro leagues, they're definitely pretty big humans still.
Oh, for sure. I've seen, there's a guy that he's in my brokerage and I think he just won his physique show.
Chris.
He's jacked, you know, he doesn't look like a small guy by any means.
Yeah.
But,
So yeah, those are the three main divisions. Once, in the amateur levels, which is where I'm at, the NPC, their weight classes for open bodybuilding, there's no height class. So it doesn't matter how tall you are. It's just, it's kind of like wrestling. There's just weight classes, and you got to make that weight.
So, and what are the weights?
There's a bunch. There's, I want to say like,
is it broken down?
It's like a welterweight. It's like 15 to 20 pound increments, basically. Okay. Like a bantamweight, welterweight, middleweight, light heavy, heavy, and super heavy.
Okay. And what do you compete at?
I've been a light heavy.
So what weight is that?
That is 174 and like 3/4 to 198.
Okay. And what do you, like, what do you walk around at versus, cause I know you guys, like, you guys diet down. Yeah, like,
what's
time,
that prep
right?
like?
Prep's tough. So the quicker answer real quick, off season, I'm between 220 and 230.
Okay.
And then I cut down, last year, I think probably my lowest was like 194 in prep. So I came in near the top of that weight class. This year, I'm a little bit heavier. So I'm probably going to hopefully dip in at like 197, 198. So I'll like the biggest
top of
possible.
The class.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Otherwise I'm in the heavyweight, which is 198 to like 234. So the big variant, you know, very variance there. So, but yeah, as far as prep, it sucks. I have a mantra, the more you suffer, the better you look. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, when you think about it, when you're dieting in order to lose body fat, you're not consuming enough calories to the point your body is consuming its own flesh to survive. So you are starving yourself, so its body is literally consuming itself. Doing that for a month or two, not terrible. But when you do it for 12, 16 weeks, get to like sub 10% body fat, you know, single digit body fat, you're usually pretty miserable.
Yeah.
It gets to a point where like everything hurts. You're always tired. Doesn't matter how much sleep you get or how much caffeine you get. Your heart rate might be through the roof with a bunch of energy drinks, but like you're not moving.
Right.
Brain's not functioning. And then, you know, part of it is... Your brain runs on glucose. So if you're super low or no carbs, your brain doesn't work very well. It requires glucose. And if you're not giving it, it has to create it from something. And that might be adipose tissue or, you know, some fat in your diet, if there is any. But for me personally, usually the fat will start to go and then the carbs will go. So I get to the point where I'm, you know, not eating a lot. It's mainly just protein and vegetables. So everything hurts. You're always tired. Body's just achy and sore. It's like, you know, if you're sitting on the couch, you got to get up. You're like, ooh, all right. Like, it's like a chore. You know, I'll go like walk up the stairs to my apartment. And I like look at the stairs before I go up. Like, oh boy, here we go. Like, got to do this. So, you know, and it's not all bad. Like, it's worth it. But again, at the end of the day, you have to starve yourself until your body consumes its own flesh to get to those super lean body fat percentages.
So are you doing the 12 to 16 week prep heading into a competition? Or?
Luckily, I stay really lean in the off season.
You seem pretty lean right now. I mean, I can see all the veins in your arms and you're probably, what do you weigh, like 2?
Right now, I am dieting. So I am like 208. No, I was 210 this morning. 210 and like some change. So I am probably, this is the heaviest I've been at this point in prep.
Right?
Yeah, because I've been heavier during off season. I've been like up to 225, 230. But... the longer you diet, the like worse it gets. And so luckily staying pretty lean in the off season, I don't have to diet for an extended period of time because I don't have as much to lose. 20 or 30 pounds kind of seems like a lot, and it is, but I can get lean relatively quickly and like I can suffer and do that. So, you know, I can get stage lean if I work hard in like 10 weeks, you know, and I've done 8 week preps. I could have been a little bit leaner, but it was like, kind of like, all right, let's just see what happens. Mm-hmm. This prep, honestly, I don't remember where I started. There was a chance I was going to do a show before the main show that I'm doing.
When is this? When's the main one?
So the main one is just under 5 weeks now.
Okay.
So it's North Americans out in Pittsburgh. But yeah, so staying lean in the off season helps it so that I don't have to do as long of preps. The more fat, the more body fat you have to lose, typically you're gonna have to do a longer prep. Otherwise it's going to be a harder prep. You know, you can do 16 weeks and cut 200 calories a week or something like that. Like I'm just kind of throwing out general numbers. But if it's a shorter time, you got to cut harder then. So some people do, longer preps because it's easier on their body a little bit. But luckily being pretty lean in the off season, I never get like too soft. I typically have abs year round, even not shredded. I can do a prep in like 8 to 10 weeks and be in pretty good shape. And then for like a big show, like 12, 14 is like a sweet spot where I can get like peeled and be.
It's crazy. And so what's the, I can definitely relate to like the weight cutting. I mean, not to the extent that you have, because I mean, I've cut weight for wrestling and jiu-jitsu many, many times, but not to the extent where I'm dieting for 12 weeks. It's like, I'm losing anywhere between like 10 and 15 pounds is what I've done. But I guess the biggest difference between like what I do versus that, or versus what you do, I guess, is like, I have to perform. Well, not that you have to, you have to perform as well, but it's not like
definitely a different type of performance.
Yeah, you know, like I got someone, you know, trying to hurt me and I got to be a little bit more.
You got to be like functioning at a high level, like, and, you know, focused and very aware.
Power versus hypertrophy.
Right. Yeah. So now like when, like, so if they, you know, do you have like a time where you have to weigh in versus the time you go on stage, or how does that work?
Yeah. So typically you weigh in usually the day before. Okay. Some big shows you might be able to do it the 2 days before. Yeah. Because especially if you're close, you might not get to eat, or you might have to eat very little, or not, you know, manipulate your water as well. So having like, I remember last year at North Americans, I was able to weigh in 2 days early. So that was great, because then that next day, the day before the show, I don't have to worry about making weight and, you know, cutting my food. I can focus on filling up my food, adding in calories, adding in carbs, so I can start to fill out the muscles. But a lot of shows are typically the day before. So you do have to play with it and make sure your nutrition, water, sodium, all that stuff's on point so you can make weight. And then we typically, after you make weight, we typically do what's called carb loading or loading.
Because you got to like look full again.
Yeah, exactly. So when you get really, really lean, especially because you've depleted carbs, your muscles start to get flat. That, you know, we call it flat because you might be really lean, but the muscles are flat because there's no glycogen. And there's, you know, potentially, depending on where you are, may not be a lot of water. So the muscles look flat. You actually kind of look worse. And then once you start getting a little bit of water, a little bit of sodium and some carbs, that actually fill up. You get some glycogen stores in the muscle and they like look bigger. They look fuller. They push against the skin more and you look more ripped, even if your weight went up a little bit. So having more time between weigh-ins and when you're on stage allows you to manipulate the food and, you know, kind of focus on the food rather than having to starve yourself to make sure you make weight. And then of course there's, you know, it depends, you know, if you're weight 210, you know, you're not going to make it for a light heavy. You're not going to be a super heavy. You don't really have to do it. You know, you're going to fall in the middle of that weight class. So it is obviously there's, you know, variance depending on who you are and what your weight is. But when I'm trying to make like a 198 and I'm sitting at 210 right now, it might be close for me. You know, I have no problem making weight, but that day of weigh-ins, there might not be a lot of food.
Like, do you do any like sauna, like water cuts or anything to make weight?
I've never had to do a sauna or anything like that. But we do cut water and manipulate. So typically the first, like, you know, typically shows are on a Saturday. Not always, it varies, but usually like say shows on a Saturday, Monday through Wednesday, I'm drinking a gallon and a half, 2 gallons of water a day. You know, Thursday might be like 1 gallon, Friday half gallon or less, or like sometimes it's a half gallon done by noon and I don't drink anything until, you know, maybe a couple sips the day of the show. So we manipulate the water to make weight, as well as manipulate the water to have like basically dehydrate yourself. So your subcutaneous level of water is gone. So then there's like just a little layer of water under the skin. Kind of reduce that. So if you've ever like woke up hungover and then you look in the mirror like, dang, I kind of look good right now.
Yeah.
That's kind of what we're doing. We're dehydrating ourselves to make ourselves look leaner and kind of reduce that amount of subcutaneous water retention.
In between the skin and the muscle.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's another way that one, we manipulate water and sodium to make weight, as well as make ourselves look better and dehydrated on stage so that skin looks tighter and you look better.
That makes sense.
Quick question, because this is one of those little phenomena I noticed like right when I started lifting weights a few years back in Springfield, Missouri. I always noticed like after an hour of drinking, like you said, hey, I look good. But like I'd go to the gym and I would have like a, I would usually have really good workouts like the day after like really heavy drinking. Can you explain to me why that might be?
I don't know. I think you might be a freak of nature.
Yeah. I've never experienced
or that. I mean, depending on what it was, you might've just been young where you could get away with that kind of thing.
I was like in my mid twenties.
Yeah. I mean,
that'll do it.
Yeah. That'll help. At 31. How old are you, Murph?
31.
Yeah. Okay. I wouldn't recommend it now.
I don't even drink anymore, but I was also powerlifting at the time. So I wasn't like going after aesthetics or anything, but I would just notice I would get in there and especially like deadlifts, I would feel really, really strong.
Yeah. I have no scientific reason for that. Cause it should be the opposite. You know, if it's heavy drinking and you were able to pull it off and like do it, you know, it might've just been, you were kind of young and the, you know, when you're young
intolerance.
Yeah. I mean, I remember in college, like I was drinking Thursday, Friday, Saturday, lifting, you know, all those days. Like I remember going to the gym on like a Friday night, coming home and having a shower beer as I'm like getting ready.
Yeah. Me too. 30,
yeah, exactly.
Follow me for more health and fitness tips.
Yes. Yeah. That's what set the foundation for me was Busch Lights in the shower.
Yeah. I loved a shower beer in college. And all your buddies are, you know, getting ready.
A fresh cold beer in the shower. Yeah.
You guys are so good. Are gross. Cause like, it's really hot shower and you're drinking a beer in there.
Cold beer.
Oh, it's great. No, it's cold. It's like contrast therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys are gross.
I had a buddy that got one of those like suction
cup holders
that you put on awesome. The, you put to the thing and you just put your beer. You don't have to worry about water getting in or anything.
I just, dude, humidity in any capacity, I hate. And I'm born and raised Midwestern, so it sucks. And I was actually talking to Andy one day a couple years ago at HQ. He goes, yeah, dude, I'm going to go to Arizona with everybody. I'm like, oh, send us some of that dry heat. He goes, nah, man, I love this shit here. I feel like it cleans out my pores. I'm like, I feel like it's putting shit into my pores.
Yeah, I'm a baby. I hate the humidity here. Like, especially growing up in Northern Michigan, I'm like, when I walk 10 feet to my truck from my door, I'm like sticky right. already. I'm like, fuck this.
My very first car here, it was a black car, leather seats and no air conditioning. Ooh. So anywhere I went, it was a great deal. I loved the car otherwise. Had a great sound system. And that was all I wanted at the time, you know, and it had a sunroof. And I was like, all right, cool.
those head units.
It clipped off. Yeah. It was one of those ones.
Yeah. You got to take it out so somebody wouldn't steal it.
Yeah, exactly. I used to always have to bring like 2 shirts everywhere I went because it was like the back of my shirt would just be soaked.
Yeah.
I'm just
when so the first truck I brought here from Michigan at some point, I think it was the first summer I was here, or first full summer, the AC went out. And it was like, I think I moved here in like September of 15. So it would have been like the summer of 16, my first full summer. The AC went out in my truck. 5-10 minute drive home, I'd be sweating. I have to get home and like shower and put new clothes on. I'm like, oh, I hate
every
it.
Every time, dude.
Yeah.
Just being a big sweaty dude.
Yep.
Even with the new car that I just got, it's got leather seats and with the AC and all that, my legs are still sweating.
Oh, yeah.
AC's cranked, but yeah. Just having your skin touching stuff still.
100%. Well, now that the shorter shorts are cool again, especially now, the backs of my legs sweat,
Yeah.
It's like that was like a switch over the last few years.
Yeah.
Shorter shorts.
Getting pretty short.
Too. Going back to.
I'm a 5-inch kind of guy.
Yeah.
Who? Was it Knight Rider that always rocked the
Magnum
shorts?
PI.
Magnum
yeah.
PI.
Yeah.
Had the short shorts. Those are coming back.
No, for sure. But because I remember wore
white ones too.
Yeah. I would never wear shorts if they were above my knee. Longest time. You
talk to Tyler Hegley. He's gonna say they never went out of style.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then I don't know, something happened a couple years ago and then everybody started wearing short shorts again.
Yeah. I remember for the longest time it was like cargo shorts. It had to be below the knee. Right. Yeah. If it was above the knee, it was like or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw some kids walking through the subdivision yesterday and one of them had like really long jean shorts on and like takes me back to middle school.
Yeah, those are becoming like a thing again too. Yeah. Like the jorts.
Jorts are
like
coming
always,
back for
yeah,
sure.
You always made fun of people in jorts like
I
years
was
ago.
I was at Matt Boat's house yesterday and he recorded his podcast in a pair of jorts. So
I feel like they're becoming okay again. They're like cool again.
I
don't know if the cargo shorts will ever make a return.
Well, the thing is like generations come back. Like every 20 years, we start to reminisce about what was, because think about the beginning of this decade. You know what music was like really, really popular at the beginning of this decade?
20?
Yeah.
Mumble rap?
Yeah, actually. No, I'm not kidding. And it's because what was mumble rap? It wasn't just a bunch of kids drinking lean. It was also you look at the style of things. Well, 20 years ago, we were all listening to emo and pop punk. Well, Lil Uzi Vert, Lil Peep, all these guys, they were kind of that emo pop punk with an auto crooner thing to it. And I was definitely one of the kids who had a more urban style. So you better believe I wore shorts that were below the knee. Then I joined a fraternity. Southern style is totally different. And they make endless amounts of fun of you.
Yeah. If you showed up in cargo shorts in my fraternity,
get the fuck out.
Yeah. You were not allowed.
There's a lot of things
with cargo shorts and a longboard. They would not let you in.
it's funny. Cause with baseball, the evolution of the gear that they would give you for training gear and stuff, you had the long shorts on, the baggy shorts. And now it's they've gotten tighter and shorter throughout. And I mean,
at the combine, they're just wearing compression shorts now, underwear.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that dude who tripped over his own dick.
You guys remember that? Was that at a combine? Or?
Well, I don't know. He didn't really trip over his dick, but he was doing the 40-yard dash, and somehow his shorts fell down, and just big ass hog just dragging across the turf as he falls. Like, he can't miss it. It's like a baby arm. He can't miss it.
I'll make a reel out of this.
No, it's great. It's hilarious.
Oh, wait, I guess I can't. Can I
turf burn on the?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'll just cut it from the waist up.
Yeah. Poor guy. I want to. Yeah, I can't remember the guy's name, but I always remember that clip.
He now holds a record for combine
for sure.
Performance and something.
Combine
it wasn't bench press or 40-yard dash.
Yeah,
it was dick.
His dick, his giant ass dick, dragging across the turf as he falls.
What's that? What was the football movie with Colbert? The Longest Yard. The new version of The Longest Yard.
Yeah, with Adam Sandler.
Oh
yeah,
Goldberg has that massive.
Oh,
the massive cup.
Yeah,
it didn't have an X on it or something.
It's like a shin guard.
Yeah.
Dude, that's such an underrated movie.
Oh, absolutely.
It's so good. That's such a stacked cast too. It's got Joey Diaz. It's got, Adam Sandler, Burt Reynolds.
Joey Diaz low key been in a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Can't forget Nelly.
Yeah. Nelly. Yeah, dude. It's a stacked cast. Yeah. Stacked cast.
So.
Yeah, but anyway, so let's get into, you know, obviously you're a business owner. How did that develop? What was that process like?
Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, I graduated, I think it was December of 18, and then February of 19 is when I got my license in the mail and could, you know, legally start operating. I knew of a friend who had like an office and a gym, but he had another job, and he's just like, I need a chiropractor to fill this. He's like, would you want this? Would you want to buy, partner, whatever? So I was like, yeah. And so basically what I was is like what we call an independent contractor. And, you know, an associate is like an employee. I was an independent contractor. So he owned the rights to the website and the name of the chiropractic office. But I did the rest. What I made was all for me, all the advertising, all the patients. I did, you know, do it all myself, but it was technically under the umbrella of his, you know, existing name.
Okay.
So I got to work there and, you know, it's essentially running my own business basically. And I just knew that I didn't want to work for somebody. So within chiropractic, we go through a lot of school. It's very similar to an MD in the amount of hours and classes. At the end, it's the only differences mainly are they spend a lot more time on pharmaceuticals and stuff like that and toxicology, obviously. And then we start to switch to like palpation and stuff like that. But we take pharmacology, we take toxicology, we take, I have a bit of a speech impediment. It's like pharmacokinetics. Basically how drugs interact. Yeah. How drugs interact. Like if you take drug A, drug B, put it in the same person, what happens to them? So, and we also take all the internal disorders, ENT for ears, eyes, nose, and throat. Like we do all that stuff too. So our schooling is very different, are very similar, but at the end we just switch with drugs and hands-on manipulation. So when we come out, you know, MDs, you do like a residency, you go to a hospital or, you know, a general practice and like, you're kind of just, your pathway is set. Chiropractic is not like that. You can be an associate and like work for somebody. You can start your own independent contractor. There's ways where you can do, there's places like it's called Max Living Integrity. And basically they're like, all right, we'll fund you, buy you a brand new building and practice, but you have to do exactly how we like practice. You have to basically read a script, treat off a script, do this, and you get paid X amount. So there's not a lot of, there is a lot of variability in what you can do as a chiropractor afterwards, but all of those other ways, other than becoming like an independent contractor or owning your own business, you're an employee, you get told what to do, you get told how to treat, you get paid what you get paid. And to be honest, as a chiropractor, you don't get paid a lot in those roles. Sometimes starting position is like 20 to 40. At this time and age is like nothing.
Right.
Especially after being in school for 10 years or so.
Right.
I was like,
a ton of debt probably.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about that. Yeah. I should have put that down for things I don't want to talk about is how much student loan debt I had to do to get through all the schooling. But anyways, yeah. So I was like, well, those jobs kind of suck. I want to be my own boss. I won't have to answer to anybody. And you know, if I fail, I fail, but you know, I have a chance to make more of myself making more than 40 grand a year after earning a doctorate. Like that seems pathetic. Yeah. I could go to McDonald's and work 40 hours a week and probably make 40 grand a year. Especially with them.
Especially now. I drove by one said like $16 an hour. I was like,
yeah,
bro,
exactly.
Dude, when I was a 16-year-old kid, like
10 bucks like, an hour.
10 bucks was great.
10
yeah.
bucks an hour was awesome. You know?
Yeah.
And like now it's just crazy that it's, you know, everywhere you look, there's hiring X amount of dollars per hour and you see it all over. Shit.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
So, but yeah, I was like, I don't want to be an employee and I want to, you know, be able to make some money and especially be able to have like room for growth and stuff like that. So that opportunity fell into my lap, which basically allowed me to own a business. And I started from there. And again, my connections and living here for a few years prior to opening up allowed me to have, you know, kind of a good,
friends,
like a head start and friends and word of mouth. So that really helped me. And I, you know, I had a pretty good start right off the bat, which was very fortunate because it was, you know, I only made what I, you know, I only ate what I killed. So right. If I didn't have patients, I didn't make money, you know, and my first week or two, there was a day where like I would have a patient and that was it. Just one. And then like Wednesday, no patients. Thursday, two patients. And then it grew. And I think by like month three or four, I had like 130 visits that week or month. So like I was able to do like very well pretty quickly, like very blessed to have that. But it's been, you know, a work in progress. Because again, now I'm established. Now people know who I am. But it's still, if I don't see patients, I don't make money. I don't have a set salary. I don't have like, you know, anything back up. Like I have to see patients to see money, to make money.
Yeah.
So
we can definitely relate to that.
And it's just, you know, I like that because it motivates you. Like, you know, I know you get commission as a real estate agent. You don't sell houses. You don't get that. Right, so right. Like it kind of helps drive you and push you. And then on the other end, like when you make the money, when you make the commission, when I see patients, when I make money, it's because I've earned it. It's not like I just showed up 9 to 5, 40 hours a week. And you know, I get X
I was
amount
sitting in this building.
Yeah. It's like, so when I have a good week, that's because I did good. I did good marketing. I did good treating. I did, you know, good enough to have people spread my name and stuff like that. And if I had a bad week, I need to turn it up and figure out what I need to do better, where it's treating differently, learning more things, marketing better, X, Y, and Z. So I like the fact that I've been able to, like, you know, be my own boss, and it's given me a lot of freedom, especially with bodybuilding and stuff like that. And then, you know, it's stressful because you know how it is to you, both real estate agents. It's not a 9 to 5. It's 24/7. No. There's people blowing up your phones at 9 p.m. for appointments or for showings or listings or whatever it is. Like, right. You're working 24/7 almost. Obviously, there's downtime and stuff like that. Like, but
it's something we've talked about. We think we talked about on the last episode. We were like talking about, you know, got to kind of set boundaries with people sometimes too. You know, like, you know, people, I get a guy like right now, he's on the West Coast and I'm helping him buy some investment properties here. And he's just like blowing my phone up at like 11 o'clock at night. And I'm like, dude, I'm not responding right now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm about to go to bed. Like, I can't, I'm not, if I, cause if I start responding, then he like knows the door. Yeah. It opens the door. And it's like, I need to like, cause I, earlier in my career, I used to just really, you know, just whenever I was like, man, I will like, respond gotta do to anything. You. Yeah. You're I'll right. do anything, you know? And now that being in it 5 years and a lot more established now, it's like, okay, I can set my boundaries. I need to with my life now. It's just like, it's hard when you got kids and all other things. You gotta set time for people that, you know, I can't just be 100% real estate agent all the time.
Yeah. I feel like that's kind of a natural progression as like an entrepreneur. At the beginning, you like, know, if you have the right mindset, I think, you know, you have to bust your ass, go right. above and beyond, like 24/7, 365, like no days off, you know, always working. And then you get to a point where like, all right, I'm starting to be a little bit more stable. I gotta, you know, find some time for myself. I gotta be able to know when to turn it off. Like, it might be, you know, I hate the word balance, but balance might be like 95% on, 5% off.
Right.
You know, maybe it's 10 p.m. at night, you know, and off, and Sundays are off or something, whatever.
Yeah.
But you do, yeah, you learn that you are, I can't always be at 110% because eventually it's gonna burn out. Yeah, exactly. You're gonna burn out, and then your work is gonna suffer, family life's gonna suffer.
You're not going to enjoy what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So,
and I think, you know, you need to be the best version of yourself, you know, because if you're just getting burnt down all the time, then, you know, it'll reflect that on your patients or your clients or whoever it is.
Yeah.
Because they're going to sense that. At least I think so.
I had that conversation with a patient yesterday. He was like, I don't know when I should just, you know, suck it up and keep working or like take rest. I'm like, well, most of the time you probably should suck it up and work, but there are times you need to rest. You need to recover in order to continue like a high level of productivity. You know, if you go 10 days in a row, no breaks, 24/7, 4 hours of sleep, eventually your work's going to start, you know, turning to shit. It's going to go downhill. I'm like, maybe 1 out of 10 days, again, that balance word is very variable, I guess, sure. But you got to find time to rest for yourself. And when it came to a workout perspective, I was like, look, I train Monday through Wednesday right now, Thursday's off, Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. So if Wednesday, I don't feel like training, well, I have tomorrow to be off. Like, I know I'm taking proper rest because I have that set schedule. So it's very rare that I ever take a day off that I'm not supposed to take off because I have a set schedule. So even if I'm dragging ass on Monday or Tuesday, it doesn't matter. Those are days. Thursday and Sunday are my days to, you know, rest and relax. So those are like the boundaries with my current split.
You have to set it up that way.
Yeah. And the same goes for business. And
right.
Of course. Well, and you said something a little bit back that I kind of want to circle back to was, you know, of when you're getting started in the business, you need that kind of drive and especially like doing a, you know, and I'm finding, and I've helped a couple different people kind of get started in this and, you know, and I found that it is kind of have that or you don't is what I'm kind of finding. It's, you need to have that drive. You need to, I find that it's a lot of people that have been kind of stuck in like W-2 roles that they just find themselves like waiting for things to happen. Like, this is not that. Your industry, our industry, like you can't just, business is not just going to knock on your door because you got your license.
Yeah.
You know, like you need to go out and you need to produce.
But a lot of people have the idea of being like self-employed. It's like, you know, it's been marketed to them in a way that they believe that it's like seamless and easy and just like almost impartial to your effort. And it's like everyone in this room here at least listens to Andy. And, you know, I've spent a shit ton of time. But like the thing that he always talks about on the podcast is like entrepreneurship is like, that when you get to the point where like you can make that decision to step away, you've put in so much time and effort. And I don't know, dude, it's one of those things. Like, I've been on my entrepreneurial journey legitimately now for like a year and a half. It is the hardest fucking thing. It is the absolute hardest fucking thing I've ever done.
Peaks and,
I like, right. I've noticed I'm, you know, 4 or 5 years in, and there's good days, there's good months, there's good weeks and stuff. And then there's, you know, weeks where like the patient numbers are down, or I have a couple nutrition clients drop out, or I just had one that was going to sign up and found out she was pregnant. So she's not going to work with me.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't matter how long you've been in, like, there's always new things to learn. There's always more shit to deal with. And, you know, even if things are going really well, like, you know, even with Andy, he's obviously doing well, has, you know, who knows how money, but he's doing well, but he owns what? 7, 8, 9 different businesses. There's always something. There's always a new problem. And then you're always trying to grow it. So you have to improve what you're working on, grow it and improve it. And then, you know, deal with the fires that come up as they go. Like, there's always something, no matter how hard you've been working. So it is a never ending like process of working and learning and improving.
Right. Well, and I think you need that early time to learn what works and what doesn't work and have those failures and learn how to come back from those failures stronger. I mean, right now, businesses on my side of the things on the finance side, I mean, sure, clients are coming in. I've got plenty of people pre-approved, but, you know, there's not a lot of homes for sale. So it's like, all right, so I need to go in and make sure that I'm going to ramp up and get back to bringing in more business than what I'm currently bringing, because now that's just a rule. It's just a numbers game. You know, the more people that I have pre-approved, more likely I'm going to get more contracts, but it allows me to go back and touch base. I mean, those 15, 16 hours a day, days that I was working when I first started and learning the grind and learning all that stuff that I can fall back on and know like, hey, you know what? Yeah, I got to a point in my career where I didn't have to go to open houses on Saturdays or Sundays. I didn't have to do all these things. I don't have to do all these things that I did when I started, but now with business kind of changing a little bit, I know like I'm going to go back and do those because it works.
Yeah.
You know, and I think if you're not willing to do that at the beginning, then you're not going to have any success.
No. Because, especially in the beginning, because right. You don't have that momentum or prior success. I think in the entrepreneur space, you have to grind 24/7, 365 for a little bit at least.
Yeah.
You know, even in, and you might even maybe get like stable and have a good, you know, patient or client, you know, flow, and you still have to grind for a while.
Right.
You know, it's not until, you know, I don't know if there's ever a time where you don't grind.
I don't think there ever is.
But yeah, there's always, it just, the grind changes a little bit. You know, you might have those boundaries and stuff, but it's still like, you know, constant.
Yeah. We've said it a few times on the show. If you're not growing, you're dying.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So at least, I mean, it might not have to be as exponential as it is at the beginning, but you know, as long as you're still moving the needle forward and getting better each time. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and a big thing that I think I've had to realize recently is like a lot of the grind and a lot of the work, it isn't always customer acquisition. Like I'm in a place where I get like guilty if I'm not like either shooting or editing for someone. And it's like, well, wait a minute. You're reaching out to people on social media. You're going on offering to do shoots. Like you're doing the touches. You're doing the other things too. Like don't feel like, and this is my own personal advice, is like don't feel like if it's not just customer acquisition, if it's like moving you forward as a person and you can tie it to your business, that's still grinding on your business.
Yeah.
You are the reflection of your business, in my opinion. Like, look, you're a health and fitness professional. You're a very healthy and fit individual. Most of what you do moves your business forward because of that. At least I'm of the opinion.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, I don't know, I forget what Andy calls it in his mental toughness book, but and part of the 75 hard program, but you, and I call them my non-negotiables. Like there's certain things that I have to get done each day, and each day is different. And that day is not complete until I knock that stuff out. And if I don't do it, then I can't check that off the box and say that this day was a success, whether I got business or I didn't get business. Just making sure I'm doing those non-negotiables, because I know if those non-negotiables are met, my business is going to grow.
Yeah.
So, and I forget how he, your daily
powerless.
Yeah, your powerless. That's it. Yeah.
Or the zero options mentality. It's, you know, it could, you can take pieces of both that argument.
Yeah. And that's the thing is like, I know Zach and I've talked about it enough on here, and for Murph, with you being a new entrepreneur, like sit down and come up with your daily tasks that you have to do every single day, and your day's not done until those are done. And the great thing about it is you make those a priority. So those are the first things you knock out in the day. And if you get that shit done and you get it done quick, then you have the rest of the day to do all the other things that you want to do.
Yeah. So like you said, it's not always like a client or patient or house acquisition or you know, whatever. Like with my nutrition stuff, like, and even my, chiropractic business lately, I've been kind of rebranding and like looking over logos and changing some of my, graphics and marketing stuff. That's not directly getting me a patient, you know, it might in the end, if it's used for marketing and stuff, and I'm looking at getting some apparel for coaching. That's not bringing me a new person, or it's not me working on a current client, but it's something that I'm doing to move the needle forward with those businesses.
Right, get your brand out there more.
Yeah. And it's like, I still have the non-negotiables. I got to go and see patients, you know, like today I still have to go see patients after this. I still have to do those things. So you got those non-negotiables. I got to go see patients. I got to do all the work I do for my clients already. And then when those are done, I still have to look at, all right, here's, you know, I got to design a shirt. I got to figure out the brand for the
shirt.
Post
to social media.
Exactly. Right. Post, you know, social media, figure out more marketing and stuff like that. So there's always like those extra things to do even after the non-negotiable.
Yeah, absolutely. So
what would you say your main like tool is for marketing?
Instagram, but I need to do a better thing. That was something I did well at the beginning when I started was, you know, word of mouth and then using Instagram to show I'm a chiropractor. Here's what I do. Here's how I treat my patients. Here's the things I offer. And then I think, you know, I maybe got complacent, things got good. And now I'm like, you know, like you said, what was it? You know, if you're not, if you're not growing, you're dying. Like, you know, I got to a point where like things shot up and then they kind of plateaued and went up a little bit. Now I feel like I'm like, all right, I need to start grinding it. And, you know, especially with social media, everyone's glued to their phone 24/7. Like everybody's on Instagram, including myself, way too much. So I'm like, that is a free form of, you know, advertising and marketing. Like I need to use that more. Because when I first started, anytime I posted chiropractic content, I'd get like 4 or 5 messages and like almost one new patient each time. Or like, or at least somebody signed big. Oh, I need to get back in. Like just reminding someone to come back in. And I'm like, I need to get back to that because it's free. It's easy. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, like I just ask patients I'm comfortable with. Can we film this? Can we take a picture of this? Can I post this? I'm obviously have to abide by HIPAA. So I, you know, I get the permission and stuff, but it's so easy, so simple. Yeah. And I'm like trying to get back to that a little bit, you know, just because it's so simple and easy.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about you guys. I love watching chiropractic videos on Instagram, watching people get twist and pop. Like my, like the one I've been watching lately, I forget what the guy's name is. He's down in Texas, but he's like, turn your belly into jelly. And he's got this towel wrapped around your neck and he just pulls your whole body. And everybody that like their initial reaction is like pure pain. But then it's like the initial, then the release afterwards was like, oh my God.
You seen the German dude who does animals?
Yeah. Like, I've seen the reactions of the animals. It's like,
you ever see him do it with like a big dog and then it like looks and it's like,
yeah.
At first, it's like, what'd you just do? And then
I love it, dude. Okay. Like, bro, there's something so satisfying about.
Well, I think it's more about the reactions.
Oh my God!
Not even like to the popping, but just like the reaction that people have when they are adjusted or the animals are adjusted.
For me, it's really both. There's certain things about like sounds, like the sound of like an adjustment.
The sound is satisfying.
Or crap. It's just like, it can also go to like weird areas too. So I'm gonna leave that alone. But like. The animals one is just so genuine.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they'll growl at him and shit. And it's like. Yeah.
And I've seen the one where like they do the pop and all of a sudden the dog like looks at him and go.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, dude, he clearly liked that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And honestly, like doing it myself, not with animals, but humans, like reactions like that are like, I get those. And those are like honestly the best. Like, especially I notice it a lot because I'm pretty close when I do a cervical adjustment. I'm like, you know,
a
foot or so over their head and I adjust them and then I see him smile or like laugh or something. And I'm like. That was a good one.
Right. Yeah. I know that one. Yeah.
Now, do you have like an area or a specialty that you focus on? I know like some people, like the guy in Texas, he does the, I forget what it's called, but
it's like a Y strap or a Y strap variation.
Yeah. Something like that. And
Brett, he does something different. You know, Brett Lux?
No, I don't think so.
He's a buddy of mine. I went to high school and college with him. We had him on a couple episodes ago. We didn't talk. We talked a little bit about chiropractic, but a lot of it was just funny ass stories. But that was something I wanted to ask you because he's dealt with a lot of injuries related to adjusting people. Like he got injured like from adjusting so many people. Is that something?
As the chiropractor, he was injured. Okay.
Yeah.
That's something we learn in school is one, obviously we're there to help people, but when you're working on people and helping people, you have to do it in a safe manner. It's kind of like having proper form in the gym to make sure you don't get hurt. So we're taught how to like keep a straight back when you're adjusting. Cause realistically I'm leaning over people all day long. My shoulders and arms are down, you know, what's it? Upper cross syndrome is a term for it. Or like tech snack is part of it. So I'm not on my phone, but I'm constantly hunched over people. So I have to, you know, remember to use like proper form, keep my back straight, try to keep my shoulders down. Even when I'm working on people, I sit close to them or stand close to them so I can have my shoulders down and back rather than leaning forward. And then also when you're adjusting, you have to protect your joints and stuff, especially with like side posture where there's a little bit more force and more weight in the movement. You have to make sure your joints are aligned so you protect yourself. You have to use physics, like your momentum and speed, in order to help your body and help the adjustment and keep yourself safe at the same time. So it is, something that we learned in school when we adjust and stuff like that to protect ourselves, because you could be a good chiropractor, but if you hurt yourself, like then you're kind of out of the job.
Well, exactly. He called me and we talked about this on our episode. He called me like, man, this is probably about 2 years. It was right before we moved into this house. So because I remember being at the old house, it was about 2 years ago. He called me and he's like one of my good buddies and he's, you know, we talk about business stuff a lot and he would call me. He's like, hey man, I got to talk to you. Or, you know, do you love what you do? He goes, and I'm like, yeah, he goes. And he's like, I love what I do, but I just don't think I could do it anymore. It's like breaking my body. And, you know, we kind of got into that on that show, on that episode, but he ended up sticking with it and kind of reached like changing the way he does things. I don't know. I wish I remember exactly what it was, but, he does this whole like different method. And apparently he's like one of the only people like in the Midwest that's doing it. It's like a different way to adjust. I don't really know, but it was just super interesting because I think he hurt his neck, but then he found out that A lot of that was apparently caused by his diet because he was like allergic to a ton of things that he wasn't
like really inflammatory diet or something.
Exactly. And now apparently he's like doing like primarily like a carnivore diet and apparently it's cleared it all up. But
oh, that's good for him then.
Yeah. So I don't know, but that was just something that I was thinking about. I was like, I wonder if you've dealt with any sort of injury or anything.
I don't think chiropractic has hurt me in any way. I did hurt my wrist working out. And that affected chiropractic. Mm. It was so dumb. I was not dumb like I was being dumb. I think I was doing an arm workout 4 years ago and like in between buys and tries, I was like, I'm going to grab a barbell and just kind of keep the pump, like a 50 pound barbell with both arms. That's mm-hmm. light
yeah,
for me.
For sure.
I did like 20 reps and I was like, didn't feel good. Hmm. And then like within a couple of days, I could barely like use my hand. My wrist hurts so bad. And so what I do when I palpate someone's hips to like check to see if I need to adjust the hips, low back, et cetera, I just put pressure down on the hips to see how it moves or if it's painful for the patient. Putting that pressure, like, you know, kind of a push up position hurt so bad. And I was like, this is a bitch.
Yeah.
And then cervical adjustment where you have a quick snap of your wrist basically was like every time I would do it, I'd like, boom. Yeah. And like they had no idea because I was hiding it. But, you know, luckily most of the time, like eyes are closed and I kept a poker face, but it hurt so bad. And it bothered me for a couple of years. Like it's still not 100%. I think I tore something, a very small ligament. Like it's called the TFCC, possibly tore it. Don't know for sure. I think I got imaging done and then I never got the report and just went on with my life. But I never had an injury from chiropractic, but I had an injury that affected chiropractic.
Oh, yeah,
and I was able to work through it, but it was not fun.
Yeah, because I mean, especially when you're working with your hands, I mean, you know, I think about that with a lot of people that I like train jiu-jitsu with and stuff, like guys that are, you know, that you know use like that are plumbers, electricians, stuff that are people that are on their feet.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if they get hurt in here, like that really can affect the money coming in, you know.
Yeah, it's a reality, like growing up and getting old. Like I think about it because like I used to work I had a gym where they had punching bags and it was like a boxing gym.
Yeah.
And I was like, I miss hitting the bag, but I was like, if I hit it just wrong,
yeah,
I could hurt my wrist, I could break a knuckle, and like that could really affect work, and like that could put me out of business for a little bit. And right. If I don't see patients, I don't make money.
Right.
So
it's I always kind of call it I would say like we're kind of on a transaction treadmill, and I mean you kind of are too.
You know,
I mean that's kind of the way I look at it. But I mean, like you said, it keeps us going.
Yeah,
you know, it's definitely. I mean, because I guess the only other way that like I mean that you scale it, like how we scale it, is I guess you know you bring in people underneath you, and you know, and I guess that's the way to scale it. But you know, I'm not ready for that yet.
Yeah, yeah, I was saying I'm not either.
I like that control.
Yeah, yeah. And like I also like adjusting people. Like that's why I got into it. Like I still love what
Very
I
personal.
Do. And it's like, yes, I like being a business owner and I like being an entrepreneur and like I want to improve and learn and grow. And like maybe one day I'll get to that position where I'm just the boss, you know, sitting back. But I like chiropractic. Like I got into adjusting not to run a business. I got into a chiropractic not to run a business. I got into it to adjust people. So I enjoy that like hands-on work. So even if I were to like, scale up and have people work for me, like I still want to work. Like I still want to do it. Even I had another doctor working for me, or, you know, at times I had a doctor that was running from my office. Basically he would work out of my office on the days I wasn't there because I was at my other office. So he, you know, technically didn't work for me, but he paid to use my practice basically. But I still got to see patients 4 or 5 days a week. So,
yeah. Well, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you go to chiropractic school, they probably teach you how to be a chiropractor. They probably don't teach you a ton to run a business, right?
There's like one or two business classes maybe. And, nothing
like
the
failure rate. I mean, for guys that, you know, go into their own practice. I mean, is that like a high?
I have no idea what the number is, but I can imagine it's probably decent.
Yeah.
And I do know there's many chiropractors who graduated and didn't pass boards. So you have to graduate and get the actual diploma. But you also have to pass 4 parts of national board exams.
Mm. Now, is that like hands-on stuff?
Some of it is. So the first 3 parts are all just textbook stuff. Like the very first one is like anatomy, physiology, you know, stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff. And then I think the 4th part is like a lot of imaging and x-rays and MRIs and stuff. And then some hands-on adjusting stuff. There's some other like hands-on type stuff too. Like orthopedic examinations and tests and stuff like that. We had to like do different tests for the liver and like examine the jugular vein, a bunch of different stuff. But if you don't pass those, it doesn't matter that you graduated. You graduated, you have the doctorate title, but you can't practice because you're not legally certified. And then after that, you also have to get your license through the state. So, but there's a lot of people that graduated that like either didn't practice or they started practicing and now they're doing something else. And I don't know all the reasons. I'm sure some of them just couldn't make it because running a business is far different than just being a chiropractor.
For sure.
You know, like I almost have two jobs. Like I have to be the doctor that adjusts and treats and diagnoses and, you know, orders images and, you know, reads reports and stuff. But running a business, marketing, posting my stuff, like that's also, that's different.
For sure.
That's being a, you know, business owner, entrepreneur, whereas being a doctor,
yeah,
they're separate things.
100%.
And we definitely didn't learn a lot about running a business.
No.
So, yeah, you know, a lot of Andy podcasts, MF CEO, and like watching my friends that are entrepreneurs and like seeing what they do and asking like stuff like that. Yeah. Asking for help, like all that stuff has helped. Cause yeah, we had a couple business classes, but
yeah,
I think most of it was more so like not when you get sued, it's, you know, or not, yeah, it's, yeah, not if you get sued, it's when you get sued. That was about it. They're like, document everything. Cause someone's going to see you someday.
Yeah.
Other than that, there wasn't a lot of business like knowledge, really.
Well, there's no better education than experience, too.
Yeah. And especially if my experience, I feel like business is one of those ones that like you kind of learn by trial and error. Like some of it you don't know until you know. Because like I've taken marketing classes, I've taken different business classes, but like,
so you get out there.
Some of it's just obvious to like, but you know, but learning and being in it is probably one of the best ways. It's kind of like a sink or swim thing.
Oh, totally.
You either figure it out or you don't. Some people don't, but. If you're you know, a hardworking person and entrepreneurial mindset, like you figure it out.
Right. Well, and then I'm sure this is also because you have the nutrition side of things too. I'm sure that kind of helps lead into the nutrition and the coaching and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, let's talk about that side of the business. So how long have you, is that something that you started right away when you started doing chiropractor? Or is
not
that,
really.
That
so I'm like, I've helped people with diets for years and years just cause like I've been working out for years and years. So, but it was usually like a mom or like my mom's aunt or, you know, something like that. And they're like, oh, can you help so-and-so with a diet? All right. I'm a diet. And then I never hear again. Or, you know, I wrote one for my stepmom. She lost like 60 pounds and, she had a bunch of digestive issues and Crohn's and all that. And most of it like got significantly better. But, for a while I was just kind of like helping people, being nice. And then within the last like 2 years, being more immersed in bodybuilding, I kept seeing what people's coaches were telling them to do. And I was like, oh, it's not what I would recommend. That's way too high, or that's too low, or like you're doing 3 hours of cardio a day. That's crazy. And finally I was like, I've been in bodybuilding for like nearly a decade, like competing. I've been training and working out longer. I've been an athlete basically since I could walk. You know, I started skating like when I could walk. I have a lot of knowledge on the human body between my degree from Michigan State is human biology. And then I have a doctorate in chiropractic. I've taken a ton of nutrition classes in both those programs, as well as a part of a master's program. So I have like, the textbook knowledge degrees. I have real world experience and I have competing experience. And I was like, I feel like I should start. Like, it was like, I just want to help people. Thing. I was like, I feel like I almost have an obligation to do better because I see so many piss poor coaches, to be honest. And so I started coaching like one or two people. And then finally I was like, I'm doing kind of good, kind of well with this. And I enjoy it. Because a lot of the other people, when I was helping them for free, again, it was like, you know, my mom's friend or whatever, send them a diet. Who knows how well they followed it. They didn't check up with me or send me check-ins. And it was just like, here's a diet. Good luck. But like working with clients weekly and stuff like that, getting to see the results was actually fun. So I was like, all right, I enjoy this. And I feel like as somebody with my knowledge and experience, like I should do this to help people. Because again, I just saw so many like piss poor coaches and stuff like that. Just, you know, doing horrendous things. And I'm like, I feel like I have to help out.
Yeah. So are most of your clients with the nutrition side, are they mostly bodybuilding clients, or do you do like some lifestyle people?
Probably about 50-50. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I work with both. I think, the bodybuilding clients are a little bit more fun because it's,
sure,
it's right in my wheelhouse.
It's your wheelhouse, and they're going to be way more serious about it. They're going to actually, you know, probably pay attention to things more, be way more diligent about what they're eating, you know?
Yeah. It's a little easier. And like,
and you get like a cool, like there's a goal, you know,
yeah,
like you can
yeah.
see, oh man, look at what they look like on stage from, you know, and yeah, I helped with that, you know?
Yeah. So
that's
actual
visible
a lot of
results.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. I would say, yeah, I like that a lot. But it, you know, I probably have like 50-50. Some of my lifestyle clients are great. Like they're, to be honest, the bodybuilding's harder because they're usually harder because there's more stuff that I have to do. Like, you know, when it comes to a prep, I have to start manipulating their water, sodium, stuff like that. So it's way more in depth. Whereas lifestyle clients, I don't have to do that. It's definitely actually easier.
Sure.
If we take out effort,
yeah,
stuff like that, effort and compliance. But some of my lifestyle clients are great. I have a lady who started with me like 6 months ago. She's lost like 30 pounds and is like a whole new woman. Like everything is great and she feels so much better. And I'm like, you're like half the woman you were before. Cause she was like 140 to begin with. So like losing 30 pounds is
a lot.
For her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and she's like a, you know, 40-year-old mom, mother of two or three kids or something like that. And like, she does really well. Yeah. So it's been really awesome and rewarding to see her get in that kind of shape and see the changes in her, like, you know, mental state and everything, and how happy she is with the changes. But then it is cool to get someone on stage and get them peeled and like have them, like, I helped coach Derek White from First Form, got him into his first show. He did well. And now he's like, let's do another. Like, I'm excited about this. That was fun. So it's really fun both ways.
Dude is an absolute unit and like one of the most friendly, humble people who could ever meet. Like when he was in the army, he was like a platoon leader of an army ranger squad. And like this guy like kept up his bodybuilding routine and physique. And it was fucking crazy to see it happen and just see what he's done in the last 2 years. Like I forgot that you actually did that for him and just two awesome people working together. And it's really inspiring to see that kind of shit.
Yeah. He's a super nice guy and he's been like, everything's to the T. Like he'll ask me questions to understand, but not like question my authority or anything like that, which I'm big on like communication with my clients. I want to be able to communicate.
Set expectations.
Yeah, exactly. And he was so easy to work with. He did everything and like he killed it. And that's why he looked the way he did. I gave him a game plan and he executed to a T. Awesome.
They were talking about keeping him in the army longer than his release date was supposed to be. And like his heart was set on working at First Form. So like I actually wrote his higher up and I was like, hey, like if there's any way that we could sway you to like let him come here and work here, it would mean the world to us and to him. And like, I know he's, you know, signed a service duty, but like, can we like do anything? And he said, apparently that letter did a lot to actually like move.
That's pretty cool. Awesome. I didn't know about that.
He's a great dude. And I'm coaching him is actually a joy because I coached him in how to be a Legionnaire and like just listens. He just executes.
Exactly.
If you want to follow a guy who's really cool, Derek White, Coach Derek, he's the fucking man.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of First Form, you're a First Form sponsored athlete. How long have you been a sponsored athlete? What went into all that? How did that come around?
I think it's been about like 4 years now.
Okay.
4 or 5 years. So in college, you know, I was buying bodybuilding.com, whatever was on sale, just getting by with protein and, you know, whatever pre-workout I could get. And then at some point I found First Form and I was like, oh, I like what this company stands for. I like the stuff they're saying. And they were definitely a little bit more quiet back then too.
Yeah.
This would have been somewhere between 2012 and 2015.
Box logo days.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just like, oh, I like this stuff. This is cool. And I started using it and I got, you know, started to have, you know, I had a little bit more time with work and school to make a little bit more money and be able to afford it. And I was like, you know, I just started exclusively using First Form at that point. I started posting about it and, you know, tagging them in stories and posting my, protein pancakes and just whatever I was doing. And just years and years and years of using them very religiously and posting and talking about it without any reward or expectations. One day I was actually going, it was when I first got my license for chiropractic. I was going to go to First Form to start treating some of the people there. And Cody Klein gives me a call and he's like, hey, you know, is there time to, you know, we can meet up? And I'm like, well, I'm coming there tomorrow or something. And I'm like, this must not be about chiropractic if you didn't know it then. And he's like, yeah, I just want to sit down and talk for a minute. I was like, okay, I'll be there tomorrow. Like, see you at 3, you know? And so I come in and he's like, hey, like, how's it going? He's like, you know, we've been paying attention. We've seen what you've been doing over the last few years. Like, and we just want to reward you for what you've been doing. And I was like, whoa, like, they're like, would you like, you know, an athlete sponsorship with us? And I was like, fuck yes. Yeah. I was just posting it because I liked it. Like I had no expectation, no like thought I was going to get like rewarded or anything out of it. But apparently, you know, they noticed and were appreciative of it. And they ended up giving me a contract. And I think it's 4 or 5 years now I've been sponsored athlete with.
Cody introduced me and Zach.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Cody's a good. Yeah, I mean, Cody's kind of pretty much the main reason I've worked with so many people at First Form.
Cody's a great guy.
Oh, he's awesome. I've him and I flipped a house together. I've helped him with a couple transactions.
His birthday's coming up, by the way.
I've talked to him for about 20 minutes on a phone call.
Yeah, he's a great dude. He's an awesome guy. Shout out to Cody Klein.
Love you, Dad.
Thank you.
Yeah. He's Dad, bro.
Yeah, so he's an awesome guy. But I feel like you're a great representation of the brand and, you know, everything that they stand for, you know. So
thank you. I appreciate that.
Of course.
What are some of the supplements and things that you recommend just for most people to, I mean, obviously everybody's going to be different based on what their diets and exercise and levels are, but is there like a general, like, hey, you should probably look into taking these things or
that? Yeah, help? I would say, honestly, top three that most people should take would be some kind of like good multivitamin. So First Form has the multivitamin packs, so just all the pills, microfactor pills. Yeah. Or I prefer the microfactor powder so I can mix it. Usually I do that mixed in with my greens and the
pineapple mango.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. I have the lemonade coming. I'm really excited for that.
Or they can keep orange though.
Yeah, I don't think I ever did that one.
Don't do it.
Yeah. Chocolate sounds decent. Or no, they just have chocolate greens. I don't think they have
chocolate. Do they have chocolate?
Okay, sea salt? I can't remember.
Oh, wait, no, that's probably the magnesium.
The magnesium and sea salt, yeah.
Magnesium's fire.
But chocolate sounds good, but I always mix it with greens. So, like, I need a fruity flavor. Yeah, fruity, yeah. But, yeah, what was it? Mango, pineapple. That's the one
it's
I do.
Amazing. Because if you just have greens and mango, pineapple, like,
And it tastes good.
They're so good.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people talk about, like, there's the placebo effect of supplements. That is one you will notice in a day.
Oh, absolutely.
The greens is actually my favorite. And, like, I love stimulants and caffeine and pre-workouts. And those ones, like, you feel. Mm-hmm. But the greens is my favorite supplement by far. Oh, like, dude, I don't even have digestive issues, but I eat a lot of food.
Yeah.
And like, I went from like, oh, I feel good. And then I took it and I was like, I feel even better, even though I didn't feel bad to begin with. So that's actually my favorite supplement. So like a good multivitamin, the greens, good fish oil. You know, we have omega-3 is a good fish oil. Those three supplements are something that honestly, every human probably should be taking.
The foundation series, right?
Yeah. There's no reason why you shouldn't be taking them. There's a plethora of reasons to have those vitamins and the, you know, healthy omega acids. Fatty acids.
But can't you just get it all from a good, healthy diet, Justin?
good fucking luck.
If you eat the entire rainbow of vegetables every single day and you eat, you know, 6 ounces of salmon per day and, you know.
Wild caught cold water fatty fish.
Yeah, and if you suntan your taint, like maybe. Yeah.
Like, dude, but that's one of the great things I loved about working for the company, and that's the position they put you in, because you're not there just to sell things. Like,
you're there to help.
Exactly. The thing I love about First Form as a company, as opposed to like a lot of other people who do sponsorships, is also based largely on the relationship you build with them. And if you have a relationship that's built off of education, that's something, I mean, dude, what if I, most of the things that brought us together were asking each other questions and being able to validate it and then saying like, okay, no, these are my guys. That is what they do well. And when I was coaching salespeople, it's not go out there and just say, hey, I have a discount code. It's like, what are the problems I can help you solve? More importantly, what's the education you can walk away with? Because you're not supposed to rely on me for everything. I'm supposed to make you independent.
Yeah.
100%. I fucking love that about the company.
I remember, I guess I forgot my First Form sponsor story. Quick little insert. There was one day where I was like, I want to like work First Form. I want it. The next day, an ad came up for them accepting Legionnaires in Michigan. I was like, this is God. Like, there's no, like, this is no fucking way.
The North has a lot of Legionnaires too.
Yeah. So, and
so were you a Legionnaire with them?
I was a Legionnaire first. Oh, okay. Yeah. So I, you know, just used their product for a while. And then, I said, that one day I'm like, this is a cool company. Like, I want to work. Next day I saw an ad on Instagram that was like, we're accepting Legionnaires. And, you know, so I applied, got it. And that was one of the, you know, going back to what Murph was saying, one of the first things they like taught us is like, we're not here to sell, here to help people. If that creates a sale, great. But we're here to help people first. That's what it is. Help people, educate people, help them achieve their goals, help them achieve better health. That was like the priority. And I was like, this is what I like. Like, I'm not here to like just sell money and have a discount code or whatever. Like, if I make money, awesome. But I want to help people. Same thing. I'm in chiropractic. Same reason I'm, you know, nutrition coach. Like, if it pays the bills, great.
Right.
But I'm doing it because I like it. I wouldn't do it if I didn't like it. And I like to help people. It
reflects an attitude of leadership. And that's so comforting.
Well, and then that's where my business took off. I mean, when I first got into this, like, you're taught to sell, like, sell different things. And when I just came back to just being like, hey, like, I'm not a good salesperson. I just know how to educate you on what it is that you're about to buy and give you as much information as you can to help you make a decision. I mean, I could just sit here and throw you a pre-approval like every other loan officer in the world, or I could sit down and do a consultation with you and discuss like why all what options are available to you and how you do it. And ever since I started doing that, my business has just taken off. It's not so much trying to just to sell, but just to like, hey, whether you work with me or not, like know your options, know why these options are good. Whether you take them elsewhere, cool. If not, odds are they're going to they've stuck with me. But yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing in that. Like, it's just educating.
And yeah, and I'm sure your clients really appreciate that, especially with, like, buying a home. I got close to buying a home a while ago, and I never did. But I have no idea where, like, where to start, and what to do. Like, you could be like, sign this, and you get a house for this much, and I'd be like, okay. Obviously, I'm smart enough to double check.
Right.
But I'd be like, okay, like, I have no idea what I'm doing. So having, you know, you educate, I guess, your clients and stuff and teaching them, like, the process and what their options are and why they have X options and whatever. And helping them get into a home within their budget that they want. Like you're helping them. And I'm sure they really appreciate that. And then you'll get business from them or they'll come back to you when they need to sell or buy again or, you know, whatever it may be.
Totally. And I mean, I focus like my mentality since I've become a real estate agent really is it's been relationships over transactions. Like, okay, well, even if this person doesn't end up doing anything with me, I just want to create like a good relationship. And so that even if I don't get business from them, like, maybe down the road, if I do such a good job with them, or even if they just liked what I said, you know, that my business will grow because they'll probably, you know,
tell someone about you, or if you know, down the road they do want to buy a house or something changes, they'll come back to you. Like, you know what, Zach treated me well. Zach we get a good relationship. So they'll come back where, yeah, they'll refer you to someone else. Yeah.
I mean, shit, that was like the, like going back to Cody Klein. I mean, yeah. I told him, like, I could have easily gotten a deal him, but I told him how to do something that was
turned him away. Actually.
Yeah. To save him. This is your better option.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not all about the sale. Hope, and then he appreciates that. And that translates into, like, that's, I mean, we've had a few clients that own homes free and clear and telling them how to work with that equity instead of taking out a mortgage. So,
right. No, 100%. It's definitely, there's so many different ways to do it when you're buying a house. And there's so many, there's a lot of people out there that, you know, could do some shady shit, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, there's a lot of, you know, it's pretty easy to get your license in real estate. You know, I mean, you take the class, pass the test, and then you got your congratulations. Here's the piece of paper. But now, like, you gotta actually know what you're doing.
Yeah.
There's a whole business behind it. There's a whole, you know, I mean, I always say I'm a marketing company that sells real estate, but I actually got to be good at selling real estate too.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, yeah. So there's a lot that goes into it. So.
And that's respectable as well. Like, you know, educating your clients and stuff like that. And like you said, you kind of turn someone down because
I turned down a lot of people.
That's better for them rather than flying in your pocket. And they probably would have never, you know, they might not have even known
the biggest thing
that you were doing them a favor, but you did.
Right. Like the biggest thing right now is people wanting to pull equity out of their house. And so they're calling and like, well, I want to do a cash out refi for this. And I'm like, well, there are other options for that, like that I can't even do. So let me get you connected with somebody that, like for me, like HELOCs right now are the way to go, and we don't offer a HELOC. So it's like I could do a cash out refinance and sure put money in my pocket, but at the end of the day, like the HELOC is going to be the better option. So it's like take that option so you're not losing the good rate you have and you're still able to tap into your equity. So there's so many different things that you can do with it. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, ever since then, and like the amount of referrals that I've gotten from people that, like, I think I probably got more referrals from people that I've turned away than people that I've actually helped.
Yeah, because they respect and appreciate that you helped them.
Exactly.
Just took a quick paycheck.
Right. So, but anyway, anything else you want to plug before? How can people find you? What clients that you're looking for, anything like that, anything you want to plug?
I mean, as far as chiropractic, I'm, you know, open to any and all kind of patients. I don't work with children's. I'm not a pediatrics doctor, but other than that, I'm open to pretty much everyone. I do treat primarily people who are young, healthy, active. Everyone I treat works out regularly. Like, I have a very active, healthy patient demographic. So if anyone's looking for that,
in our CrossFit gym.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm open to treating anybody, but I do great with, you know, especially people that are active or have sports injuries, stuff like that. Or even if it's just minor aches and pains from sports or competing or whatever. And then as far as nutrition, like I said, I do lifestyle and contest prep coaching. I have really no preference over either one. They're both great. They have their, you know, pros and cons to each, and I love it. Like I said, at the end of the day with both businesses, I'm just trying to help people. As long as I can help people, I'm happy. And if I get, you know, like I said, if I pay the bills, great. But I'm just doing stuff that I like and helping people along.
And how can people connect with you?
Pretty much Instagram. I think I have a Twitter, but I don't know. I don't know the name. I haven't tweeted in years. And same thing for Facebook. Yeah. I have one. I don't even know how to find my own pictures, but my Instagram is Dr. Justin Kelly. That's it. Yeah. Just Dr. Justin Kelly. And I, you know, if you want to message me for appointments, anything like that, get a hold of me. That's typically the best way to get a hold of me.
Perfect. Well, so we'd like to end it with one last question. Kind of catch guys by surprise. We call it the tombstone game.
Okay.
Here lies Justin. What's it say on your tombstone?
Oh, geez.
Take a second to think about it if you need it.
Yeah, that's deep. I wasn't ready for that. Honestly, I hope it just says something along the lines of like leaving a legacy and helping people.
Perfect.
You know, that's, I guess that's what I was just kind of talking about.
Right.
Like, I just like to help people, whether it's chiropractic, business, you know, nutrition. So hopefully I'm remembered and maybe someone put something on, you know, nice on my tombstone that I was a generally a good guy and then I help people out.
Awesome.
So,
love it.
That works.
That's perfect. All right, guys. Well, thanks for watching the show. Make sure you hit that subscribe button, comment what you guys thought below, and we will see you next time.